the Kakas of New Zealand. We had really come to Kapiti to see a flock of Kakas, one of the large New Zealand parrots that lived in the forests, who had been taught to come when called. George disappeared briefly into the bungalow and reappeared with a handful of sticky, dried dates. Then when we had the camera set up, he took up his position near the bird table and started to call the Kakas. "Come on then," he bellowed, his voice echoing among the forested hills. "Come on, Henry, Lucy, come on then, come on, my pets, Henry, Lucy, come on then." For about 5 minutes, he called and nothing happened. Then suddenly, a speck appeared flying high above the dark green forest. The Kaka swooped down at the bungalow and made a perfect landing on the corrugated roof, where I could get a good view of it through my glasses. It was a very large bird with an elongated and slender curved beak. The forehead was grey, and the feathers surrounding the eyes were reddish-orange. It attempted to walk along the ridge of the roof, and once or twice its feet slipped, and it had to flap its wings to keep its balance. It waddled cautiously along the ridge until it came to the guttering. Here, its feet could find better grip, so it shuffled sideways down the gutter until it reached a position where it could survey it all in comfort. It gazed at us out of bright brown eyes for some minutes, unmoved by George's efforts to get it to come down. Then, obviously deciding that we might look better from a different angle, it hung upside down and peered at us this way. It stayed like this for some 10 minutes, and then, deciding we must be harmless, it flew down and landed on the food table. Here it strutted and danced about while George and I fed it on bits of date. While we were doing this, two other Kakas appeared out of the forest, and one threw identical performances, walking along the roof, examining us from all angles, and then eventually flying down to the table. One of the latecomers was a baby, and after grabbing a piece of date, he flew nervously back onto the roof of the bungalow and left his parents squabbling shrilly over the dates on the food table. The male then flew up and perched on my head, but I soon found that to have a large and heavy parrot clinging to one's scalp with an extremely sharp set of claws, while dropping bits of half-eaten date into your hair at the same time, was not the best way of bird watching. Also, the Kaka's sharp beak looked horrible, so I had to continuously feed it dates for fear that I might otherwise have an ear amputated. While I was thus keeping the male occupied, George told me the story of the Kakas. Apparently, there was a flock of 17 birds which came down regularly to the bird table when shouted for. Unfortunately, the day we were there, the majority of the flock must have been over the other side of the island, and so could not hear George's bellows. This Kaka tea party had started with just 2 or 3 birds that lived in the forest near the bungalow. These soon realized that the human beings of the house were not only harmless, but were willing to provide them with all sorts of delicacies, which they could not find in the surrounding forest. So they very soon became regular visitors. The news of this soon spread in the forest, and within a very short time, there were 17 Kakas swooping down on the bungalow whenever any human being raised his voice. While George was telling me on this, I was amused to notice that the baby, still perching precariously on the roof and lacking the courage to come down and join its parents, was flapping its wings and uttering sad, throaty cries. The female on the bird table gathered up a couple of dates in her beak and flew up to the roof and proceeded to stuff them into the beak of the baby. The baby was excited, and he flapped his wings so vigorously that he almost fell off the roof. 4 times she repeated this performance. By then, George's supply of dates had come to an end, and the carcass, after making sure that we really were dateless, flew off into the forest with the baby trailing behind, still whining like a spoiled child. By now, the light had become too dim for successful photography, so we reluctantly packed up our equipment and took our leave of Caputi. As the launch plowed its way across the channel towards the mainland, I looked back at the island. The wild worlds of Caputi were, I thought, not as unusual as all that. If birds and animals anywhere in the world were left in peace and knew that they could trust the humans with whom they came in contact, the world could be full of Caputis. In fact, with a bit of effort, the whole world could be one gigantic Caputi, and how wonderful that would be!